show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
He was outstanding. You know, I thought tonight, much more consistent location to all his pitches compared to just 5 days ago over in Chicago. So he was able to throw his cutter to both sides of the plate. He threw some really good fastballs into some big power right-handed hitters to keep them from extending out over the plate. But he was in complete control. He got into a great rhythm. And every time we scored, the times that we are scoring, he's going out and putting up a zero and maintaining the momentum. So a big night for David and a boost for us.
Did you catch the last part of that comment? You know, every time we score, he goes out and puts up a zero, right? Like, I wonder if that's going back to last year, because he recognized that when David Price went out to the mound a year ago, after the Red Sox scored, he wasn't always great about holding on to those leads. So that's John Farrell from the weekend talking about David Price, who honestly did pitch very well on Saturday against the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards. A big win for the Red Sox, too. We'll get to that and a bunch of other things with the Red Sox here over the course of the next hour. All baseball for the next 60 minutes or so. A little less than that. 57 minutes, somewhere in that area. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. We remind you that the program is brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork, supplying contractors and homeowners with residential and commercial building materials since 1946. You can check them out at jacksonlumber.com. So, one more time, 617-779-0985. To me, indisputably, the biggest development for the Red Sox last week, and really more importantly, over the weekend, let's just keep it to the weekend, was Price. Price. And so I've told you here a million times already, I'm not holding my breath on David Price making a significant contribution to the Red Sox this year. I am not, because I have doubts about that elbow holding up. And I still have doubts about that elbow holding up, even after what I saw Saturday at Camden Yards. Okay, I'm not convinced yet that David Price is going to be fine. I'm not. That's going to take a while. And in fact, it may take beyond this season, if you want to know the truth, because even if they get in August, I'm still going to be waiting for that elbow to blow. After what happened in spring training, I don't know that you could feel any other way. However, and there was always a however, if I'm wrong, Jim Murray, on that odd chance, that very unlikely chance that I am wrong, and David Price can pitch like that, like he did on Saturday, I mean, let me ask you, what if? What if he can? What if this is what he is now? Or what if this is, he is now sort of back to being something closer to what he was even before he came to Boston, or maybe something closer to what he was caught in the second half of last regular season? What if Price can go out there every 5 days, give him somewhere between, let's just say, 100 and 110 pitches. Keep it modest. Okay, not 120, not 125, somewhere in the 100-pitch range. What if he can do that every 5 days and pitch like he did on Saturday? Then does it change your perception of the Red Sox?
Without question. They'll be able to live up to a lot of the preseason hype and expectations that this team was a World Series team or could have a deep playoff run, which my expectations dropped as soon as we heard about that injury in spring training. I still think they would win the division or squeak in as a playoff team, but if he can give you what you saw Saturday, where he was downright dominant, I think, in that game, and that was a team that was, you know, ripping them up in these first couple of games, and they started to get hot offensively, and he owned them, and the control was there, and he was efficient, and if he can be that, then they can live up to those expectations.
Would it at all change what you expect from him in October?
No.
Okay.
Of course not.
No, and I'm glad you said that, because it shouldn't. It shouldn't, and this is one of the things I said coming into the year. They should be good enough to win the division, even without Price. They should be. Eduardo Rodriguez was pitching great here in the early part of the year. So now he's out, and we do have a little bit of a news update on him, which we'll get to here in just a second, but it's going to be a while for Eduardo Rodriguez.
No, until further notice, Maz, I'm under the impression that David Price can't win a playoff game.
Okay, so, but the fact that he could jump in now and give them, you know, it really makes some of the injuries they've had to other people less worrisome. Because if Price comes in and give you consistent performance, well, then you can endure the loss of Steven Wright, even Eduardo Rodriguez, you know, what have you. You can endure some of that, and I say that because you obviously don't have a great deal of depth in the minor league system. The Red Sox don't, so there's lots of ways to go. But now if Price jumps in, well, that can change the equation. It can change the equation considerably, and look, all joking aside, I thought he was terrific in that game. Really. You know, you heard Farrell say there, threw some fastballs inside to some right-handed hitters, and he did. He was aggressive with his fastball at times. you know, the mix of pitches is still the same as it was, and I'd like to see Price use his fastball more. Because I think when he really wants to throw it in there, he can still throw it in there and it's got life on it. There were a few that he threw in that game when he needed them. And I noticed one to Machado early in the game in particular that all of a sudden I went, whoa, that ball had more zip on it, more life than I remember him having. Okay, so all of that's a good sign. And I will say the big thing about the game on Saturday with Price is that when he missed, he didn't miss in the middle of the plate more often than not. I mean, obviously they all miss at some point in the game, but the mistakes were few and far between. He didn't miss in the middle of the plate, and he missed down. Very rarely was there anything totally fat and in the middle of the plate. Right? So I give Price a lot of credit to that. That's a big development. His next one, Thursday night in New York. Okay? And that is that's a big series for the Red Sox. I know it's only June, and I know it's early June, but there were a couple of games ahead of you in the standings. They've been one of the great surprises in the league this year. I don't love the pitching matchups for the Red Sox, who will throw in order going in there. Pomeranz, Porcello, who feels a little shaky to me, and then Price, whom, you know, again, who is good over the weekend, but whom I do not have the confidence in yet. Not all the way. I'm telling you, he was good. Let's see how it goes in New York.
I also think he benefits from having another road start there, too, though.
No question, Murray.
You know?
Yep, no question. First three on the road. And this is why the Red Sox set it up the way they did. Let him get a few games under his belt before he comes back to Fenway Park. They will never admit that publicly, but I have no doubt that that was absolutely a factor. Meanwhile, the Yankees in this series, I think, throw Tanaka, Sabathia, and Pineda. So maybe you catch a little bit of a break there, too. Sabathia's pitched well here in the early part of the year. Tanaka really hasn't, although he manhandled the Red Sox here earlier in the year. And Pineda overall has been pretty decent. Severino's been the one that's been sort of better than anybody, and you're going to miss him, so you catch a little bit of a break. But in that ballpark, I don't love Porcello going there. You know, again, Price, Pomeranz always gives me anxiety, and again, we'll see how it all shakes out. But it's a sneaky, important series, which we'll get to here later in the week. Again, 617-779-0985. We'll also get to Pablo Sandoval's adventures yesterday at third base. A couple of happenings throughout the game. Edinson Volquez, the no-hitter. Albert Pujols, 600th home run. Those really more national stories we'll get to a little bit later on. I'm just wondering if people care anymore about a no-hitter, about 600 homers. Like, those used to be big things in baseball.
Especially the latter.
Right, both of them. Somebody would throw a no-no or someone would hit some sort of milestone with home runs and the whole country noticed. Now, I feel like no one. I said to Jimmy Stewart today, Jimmy, can you grab the highlight of the Volquez no-hitter? And he said, there was a no-hitter over the weekend. And you know what? I don't blame him.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of people felt. A lot of people totally felt that way. Just quickly, before we get to the phones, Eduardo Rodriguez, Murray, what was the report? He's going to be out a minimum of 3 or 4 weeks.
Correct, yeah. Dr. James Andrews, you know, he gave him the second opinion, and he has told Rodriguez to rest his injured right knee for 3 to 4 weeks rather than go for surgery.
Okay, so there you go. That takes you to July 5th. Let me just tell you right now that in all probability, you're not going to see Eduardo Rodriguez till after the All-Star break. Okay, so if you're talking 3 or 4 weeks, that's a month. And then the All-Star break is right there. Why would you wedge him back in there just right before the All-Star break? They won't. They never do. So they'll bring him back after the All-Star break. He's going to be out a while. And Brian Johnson, it sounds like, is okay, and he will probably pitch in Rodriguez's place on Saturday. So, but we start with David Price tonight. Did he win you over as a Red Sox fan over the weekend? Did you see anything that made you more optimistic, or are you like me? Because I will say that overall, I'm kind of happy with how the Red Sox have played the last 2 weeks. 617-779-0985. Mike is in a car. Mike, go.
Yeah, hey, Tony. Hey, Murray. So I called a few weeks ago. I basically was so down on the Sox. I said they were going to be below 500 by Memorial Day. And I'm eating crow right now, clearly. They're 6 games up. They're, you know, they got 2 games to get the Yankees. I think the series is huge. But I agree with you. Price was really impressive. And what I'm wondering is, from your perspective, do you think it's that him coming back now, does he feel like he's kind of the number two now, that Sale has really taken that leadership role, not just on the mound, but in the clubhouse, so maybe he feels a little less pressure, and that might be what he needs?
Well, Mike, I think that's part of it. I you know, now again, my concerns with him this year more than anything were with the elbow. But if you look at him historically, I think he's better off when there is another guy on the staff that has sort of the alpha personality, if you will. That was the case in Tampa when James Shields was more the leader of the staff. Price was the ace. Okay, so don't get me wrong. Price was the ace. But James Shields was more the leader. And in Detroit, it was Verlander. It wasn't Price. Toronto, you could say, well, what about that scenario? And I would tell you that David Price wasn't in Toronto long enough. He was there 2 months. 2 months. I don't think Price was ever really part of that team. So I think looking at him here, I think he just wants to fit in. He wants to blend in. He wants to be one of the guys. Sale wants to win. And so the way it's set up right now is better for Price. But to me, again, the big question concerns his health. Pablo Sandoval had an interesting weekend, and I told you, I'm feeling pretty good about the Red Sox, believe it or not. I know they only split with Baltimore, but I'll tell you why I have, I don't want to say I've turned, because I don't know that that's entirely accurate, but why I feel a little bit more optimistic about the Red Sox today than I have probably at any point this season.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Runners go. Here's the throw down to third. Right on target. The tag is out. They cut down Rickard safely into second base Machado, but two down.
I tell you, it just doesn't make much sense to me. You know, it's a team that doesn't run very much, and then you've got the power hitter, Trumbo, at the plate. And this is very easy. Leon stepping behind the hitter and making that accurate throw to third base to Sandoval. And that was from a standstill position. It wasn't even like he had a walking lead at second base.
They're going to look at it. This play is under review. It looked like, from that angle we saw, the last one, that Rickard may have pulled back the left hand, gone in with the right, maybe around the tag of Sandoval. Safe.
Safe.
So they overturned it.
First inning yesterday. Looked like Chris Sale might be able to get out of that inning when the Orioles made a questionable base running decision. And that one falls on Buck Showalter, the manager. Orioles try to double steal with two men on. Looked like Joey Rickard got thrown out at third. As it turned out, the play got overturned. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is not because I thought they got the call wrong. I think they get the call right. I'm bringing it up because I thought Pablo Sandoval had a hand in that. And they did illustrate some of this, too, on the Orioles broadcast, where they said, you know, Sandoval reached and tagged Rickard in the chest. So Rickard made that swim move that all guys going head first now are making, where they pull that lead hand back, that left hand back, and then go running around the side with the right hand. Bogarts did this early in the year and executed it. And it's a hard play for a fielder because you go in, you start to tag, and all of a sudden the player goes around your hand and he's in there. I still think that Sandoval reached on the tag. He reached out and he allowed Rickard to get in around him. Whereas if he just sort of keeps the glove in front of the bag, he can see the play or put the, you know, he can more easily move it to wherever the runner's trying to get at, if that's the case. Once he reaches, he's screwed. So I thought Sandoval messed that up. But the bigger issue in that inning came on a play later on where the Orioles had a ground out, which should have been an inning-ending force play. And Sandoval, Chris Davis was moving on the pitch. Sandoval thought he had a force play at second base, ended up throwing the ball in the right field because Devin Marrero didn't cover second. So the question then becomes, who made the mistake? Is Sandoval supposed to go to first there because the runner's on the move and the easier plays at first? Or does he really have the option? Could he go to either bag? And I thought it was interesting just in the contrast that existed between Jerry Remy and John Farrell, but also on the Orioles broadcast. So we're going to play them for you here so you can hear them. And I'm not even sure which one we're playing first here, Jimmy Stewart. Are we going to go with the Nesson broadcast first of the force play at second base? I just thought Sandoval had a tough day. And to me, the real question is, how long does John Farrell ride it out with this guy? Because I get the sense that Farrell wants nothing to do with Sandoval. Here's the first instance of the play at second.
3-2, ground ball to third. Sandoval will sling it in, and he throws it away into right field. Well, is he going to be safe at first and second? The inning should be over.
Now my question is, where was Marrero? He wasn't even near the bag when
right.
he threw the ball there.
Yep.
I mean, and to me, that should not be an error on Sandoval.
It looked like Marrero kind of tapped him on the head and almost apologized for not being there.
Yeah, it's almost like he took for granted that Sandoval was going to throw the ball to first base, and you always go for the easiest out. That was a mental mistake right there by Marrero at second base.
So remember, Jerry Remy played second, right? Remy played second. He's on Marrero on that one, says Marrero didn't go to the bag. And there was also a gesture that Marrero made on the field. Now, on the Nesson broadcast, they indicated that Marrero maybe said, oh, my mistake. They viewed it differently on the Baltimore broadcast. Here's what they said.
Ground ball to third. Big hop Sandoval to second. Nobody there. Ball goes into right field. Sandoval went to second base to try and get the force out. But Marrero, who doesn't play second much, and Sandoval, who hasn't played third hardly at all, never got together on this.
As Chris Davis was moving, Marrero points to first base, saying, hey, you got to chuck it over there. He's on the move, man. Get the out at first.
So now, according to O'Brien and Remy, Marrero was saying, you know, I made the mistake. I had to cover second. According to the Baltimore broadcast, Marrero was saying, no, you got to throw that ball to first. The runner's moving. I'm not going there. You got to throw the ball to first base. So John Farrell, after the game, was asked about it. And Farrell, shockingly, put the onus or the blame on Pablo Sandoval. The audio is a little tough, but he was asked about the play and where Sandoval should have gone. So here's what he said.
First base, 3-2 count, runner's on the move. That's a play you got to go across the diamond.
Okay, again, runners on the move, that's a play where you got to go across the diamond. I'm not sure that that is right. And honestly, I don't think Sandoval made a mistake on this play. I mean, could he have gone to first? Sure. Yes. Marrero still should have been on second. He still should have been on second base. The ball was hit to the left side. What the hell's he doing over there? Standing around with his thumb up his butt? What the hell's he doing? So I look at that one and I say it's hard to blame Sandoval, but it does sort of further support the idea that Farrell wants nothing to do with Sandoval. Nothing. They pulled him late in the game yesterday for defensive reasons. And earlier in that game, we had a caller on the afternoon show who wanted to know why the Red Sox weren't necessarily pinch hitting at the bottom of their order in the sixth inning of a 3-3 game. And the short answer is that if the Red Sox had hit for Marrero, they would not have had him available to play third base late in the game. Sandoval would have had to be on the field late in the game, and Farrell doesn't want that. He doesn't want Sandoval on the field in a defensive situation of any consequence. So they chose this path. And it just goes to show you how much Farrell, had the Red Sox been behind, they might very well have hit. But with the game tied, they said, we're going to ride it out, even on the road. We're not going to let Pablo Sandoval be on the field in the late innings unless we have to. Farrell has zero confidence in Pablo at third. Which is fine. It's understandable. At the same time, if you're going to play the guy, you got to sort of play the guy. Like, he's still got 2.5 years left on that contract. If you're going to salvage anything, you got to put him out there and you got to let him try to breed some confidence or cultivate some confidence in the player. Back to the phones. Mike's in a car. Mike, what do you got? Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, what do you got?
All right, gentlemen, I know you're not on stolen bases today, but a stat will be easier for you to compile than me. The stolen base is kind of dead, but I want to know, when you got a guy that's a top 10 guy, maybe 20 bases stolen per season or more, or way more than that, top 10 base dealer in the league, what is the on-base percentage or the ops of the next batter up? So you got a big base dealer on first. How does that affect the batting average and the ops of the next batter?
Yeah, Mike, off the top of my head, I couldn't even begin to tell you. Why do you ask that?
Because no one's doing stolen bases anymore. But it always seems when you have a good base dealer on the team or a good base dealer running around, you're scoring more runs and getting more runs that aren't directly related to him because you're annoying the pitcher. You're making things happen. Everyone looks at the stolen base and just says there's no difference. There's no difference. But they only do the stats based on the guy stealing the base. What about the next batter up?
Okay, look, so I think his idea, Murray, is that the runner on first can distract the pitcher, and maybe that leads to a better, more hittable pitch for the batter. And there, I think there is some truth to that. That a good base runner, particularly, see, I would say it's got to be an elite guy, not necessarily a good one, But when the pitcher says, oh, Ricky Henderson's on first, this guy's going to change the game by getting to second because then he might get to third. Those guys can have an impact. It's an interesting question. I don't think the stolen base is dead. I don't know where he's getting that from. I think that over the years, you know, if you look at teams that run a lot, oftentimes they're bad teams, but the game has become more athletic in recent years. I still think the steal is a situational weapon. That's what I think. You know, the idea that you would pick a guy who can run over a guy that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, to me, is completely asinine. Asinine. Unless the guy who is, you know, hits the ball out of the ballpark is Adam Dunn, who's a complete softball player and, a waste of oxygen, frankly. I hate players like Adam Dunn. Can't stand them. And I do like some versatility in the game. But the people who love the stolen base stats, more often than not, are fantasy players. You know, the situational steal means something to me. And the base running means something to me. How many steals a guy racks up? I couldn't give two craps. I really couldn't. And I've always felt that way about stolen bases. 617-779-0985. At least as an adult, I have felt that way about stolen bases. As a kid, I loved them. At the big league level, I really don't know how important they are. There were a couple of interesting stories in baseball over the weekend that, to me, indicate really how much the game has changed on a national level. The Edinson Volquez no-hitter, the Albert Pujols 600th home run. We'll examine both of those.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Here's the 1-2, and there's a swing, and it's a high drive deep down the left field side. It's tight to the line. It is out of here! The 600 home run club just got bigger. Albert Pujols, you're its newest member. A grand slam!
One of the many things that happened in Major League Baseball over the weekend, Albert Pujols' 600th career home run, making him the ninth player in the history of the game that reached that milestone. Ninth player in the history of the game. I want to talk a little bit more about that in 1 second, but I'll tell you what. First, we'll get back to the calls. Mike is in Worcester. Mike, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's on your mind, Mike?
I disagree with you about the manager's handling of Sandoval. You know, I don't think you should have to play the guy to give him confidence. The man is an adult. He's making 20-something million a year.
19, but go ahead, yeah.
Whatever. But and he has major league experience. He's got big game experience. This guy should come packaged with confidence. There's no reason to coddle this guy. If he's not playing good defense, get him out of the game at the end of the game. Why would you want to risk losing a game, especially in a league where one game could make or break the playoffs?
Yeah, so Mike, hold on. Because, listen, the part about taking him out late in the game, I don't disagree with. That's not really what I meant. And if that's what it came off, that's my fault. That's not yours. Okay?
Yeah.
So here's what I would say, though. That it feels like, Sandoval's been back now for 5 days. And it feels like Farrell's already taken shots at him. Right? And so all I would say is, you want to pull him out late in the game, pull him out late in the game. But if you're going to get, if this is the last shot now, does the manager have to tweak him every time the guy does something that may or may not have been a mistake?
No, he doesn't. But, I mean, he also doesn't have to coddle him. He doesn't have to, he's got to say the truth. That's the right thing to say. You know, the play goes to first. I mean, that's what I was taught in Little League.
Remy said it was Marrero's fault.
Well, yeah, it was both of their faults. You know, he wasn't covering the base, and he made the wrong play. You know, Sandoval made the wrong play.
I don't remember Farrell calling out Marrero on the play.
No, he didn't. But I mean, yeah. But Marrero is a different case, right? I mean, he's a young guy. He's coming up. He's working into the team, and I just disagree with the premise that, you know, you need to instill confidence in a player like Sandoval. You should not. He should come with that as his in his toolbox.
Okay, but yeah, Mike, and listen, a second ago that you said, though, you said the manager should tell the truth. So why shouldn't he tell the truth about Marrero? All I'm saying is this, okay? The manager doesn't like Pablo, and I can't say I blame him. Okay, he doesn't like him, but still treat him like everybody else. So you know, the guy makes a mistake, say, well, you know, Devin was also late getting to the bag. Boom, no big deal. Fine. But it feels like he's eager to throw him under the bus and get it over with, in which case, that's fine too. Then just cut the guy and be done with him. I'm just telling you, I get the sense already, Farrell doesn't want anything to do with this guy. He doesn't want anything to do with him. And I'm not sure Dombrowski does either. Maybe this is all being ordered from ownership because they're the ones paying the money. And they've had a lot of dead money between Pablo Hanley half the time and then Alan Craig, Ruzne Castillo. Add them all up. Maybe ownership's the one that wants them to ride it out a little with Pablo. One more chance. And last week, Pablo had three hits in the first game. I think he had two others after that, but the game was shaky in the field yesterday. And you know that Farrell's just waiting to pull the plug on this guy. Not that I can totally blame him. Josh is in the car. Josh, go.
Hey, Maz, how's it going?
Good.
I just wanted, you know what the count was on the Sandoval play? Was it 3-2? It sounded like Farrell said it was 3-2.
So I think it was.
So that would mean, so Davis is moving on the play. Middle infielders are going to. They're going to hold their spots. They're not. You're not going to go cover the bag. The guy's moving on the pitch anyway. Two outs. So
right. So, but I'm not.
That's Sandoval, not knowing the situation, knowing that there's not going to be somebody covering.
So I agree with part of that, but once the ball is hit to the left side, you're telling me Devin Marrero can't get to the bag?
Well, yeah, and you guys. Okay, I guess I agree with you there, but thinking. As a third baseman, the ball's hit to you. You should, if it's a ground ball, I'm going to first to get at. You need one out to get out of the inning. That's my thought.
Okay, so Josh, listen. There's no question. There's no question. He could have gone to first. And in fact, when he went to second, I was a little surprised that he didn't go to first. But also, watch the replay. Marrero doesn't move. Marrero doesn't move after the ball's put in play. Marrero stands there. So you know, there's still the chance that you're going to have to cover the bag. Get your ass over to the bag. I know everybody likes to beat the crap out of Pablo. I get it. And he's brought a lot of it on himself. But, like, it feels like mistakes that we would not hold other people accountable for, we are holding Pablo accountable for. So Jerry Remy's there saying that Marrero didn't get to the bag. Meanwhile, he could have thrown to first. Sandoval could have. No question about it. Let's go to Sean in Worcester. Sean, what do you got?
Hey, Tony, I'm just, I agree with you on the fact that Farrell has it out for Sandoval. If he didn't, why wouldn't he have made one of those long-winded explanations about, you know, some long-winded minced of words, you know, go on about how Pablo did this and Marrero didn't do this. I just think it's a clear-cut sign that he really is done with the guy.
So, Sean, that's an interesting point, right? That actually Farrell answered a question and answered it directly. Which means, you know, he was pissed at Pablo. Like, he has no problem answering the question directly when it's Pablo. When it's everybody else, he just gives you some absolute spew of meaningless dribble that's hard to, you know, decipher. Guy can impact the baseball instead of hitting it. It drives you bananas. Good heavens. Holy crap. All right, I want to jump to Pujols. Let me ask you two both the question, Jim Murray and Jimmy Stewart. The Pujols 600th home run, and there is no right answer. But 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 600 home runs, someone get to 600, it meant something. There was big news there.
Without question.
Okay, why not now?
Well, it was all tarnished because of the steroid era. Period, end of story. That's why.
Jimmy?
Yeah, it's all devalued because they went a little too strong on 73 and 761 and all that stuff. So the home run right now is just devalued.
It was previously it felt like when I was a kid growing up, that was an unattainable number. And now you got the likes of Jim Thome, who has over 600 home runs. Like
Brady Anderson hitting 50 in one year and then going away, devalued it.
Okay, so let's go to Ryan in Holbrook. He has a different opinion. Ryan, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, guys? So the reason that it's not a big deal anymore, and I agree with you guys, when I was growing up, it was a big deal. It's lacrosse. Kids want to play a sport that it's quicker. No one wants to sit through a four-hour baseball game, and baseball is just dying. next couple of years, baseball, it's not going to be gone, but it's going to be even less viewed nationally than it is now.
Okay,
baseball's
so,
on its way out.
Okay, so Ryan, let me ask you a question. Pujols had hit his 800th over the weekend. Would the same be true?
No, but then, I mean, that's a pipe dream. No one's ever going to get that high. That's just an unrealistic, unrealistic number.
Okay, but if he had done it, would people have cared?
I think people out in Los Angeles would have. Chicago, Boston, New York, big baseball cities will always care about baseball, but how many people in Oakland right now or Cleveland really care about baseball?
Okay, so Ryan, look, here's what I would tell you. I think you're crossing stories, and I don't dispute what you're saying about baseball. I worry about kids playing it too, although there was recently some study done that says baseball youth participation is actually up. Okay, and I don't know if that's true or not. It might be a manipulation in the numbers. I mean, who the hell knows? What, are people actually walking around the country counting? Or are they just going by what people fill out in a survey? Or who, how many kids signed up for Little League? And even then, I'm not sure that it's an increase. Okay? I'm more with these guys. It's the steroid era. The steroid era is what tainted it. We still like home runs. Most people still like home runs.
Like, I'm not bothered by it, but I just don't care.
Exactly. And you know what? I felt the same way. This is a product of the steroid era. You know, 500 used to mean everything. 500 was an automatic ticket to the Hall of Fame. Nobody hit 60. It didn't happen. Now, all of a sudden, it was happening with great regularity to the point where they completely polluted the game. And this is why, if baseball had half a clue, they would get away from the whole quote-unquote traditional appeal of the game. Forget the tradition. You killed it. You killed the tradition with the steroid era, which is fine. It was a trade-off. But don't sit here now and be afraid to put in a pitch clock or make some sort of a significant and radical rule changes to improve the game for the younger people. The younger people don't care about the history, which is good because you killed it anyway. So you know what? Tailor the game for them. Don't be stupid about it. To me, that it's totally about the steroid era. Let's go back to the phones. Mike's in Bellingham. Mikey, what do you got?
Hey, I'll talk about the Marrero play. He should have been there at second base, period.
Yeah, so look, Mikey, again, if you want to tell me that there's more than one person to point the finger at on that play, I'm with you. Just don't tell me it was only Sandoval. So if Marrero had gotten there, it might have been a bang-bang play, but I still think they get the out. It seemed Marrero was surprised that Sandoval would even go there. So again, I know Pablo's an easy target, okay? We all do. He hasn't come close to earning half of that contract, let alone the whole thing, and he's not even halfway through it. He's been a disaster since he got here, and defensively as much as anything else. But can we try to have some measure of fairness? Some. This is it for the guy, it certainly feels like. This is the last shot. The manager sounds to me like he doesn't even want to give him the last shot. He would rather just throw him off the bus right now.